Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Hey, welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you by Myers & Associates, serving the Midwest with industrial maintenance products and services. Call them at 515-795-3676. Myers & Associates, keeping your operations running. Welcome back to another week of Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. This is Shane Vanderhart with Brian Myers.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning. And, oh, you have been busy playing broadcaster.
I have. It's been a wild week. I mean, last Friday we taped the show, and then Saturday you and I did three hours live at the Freedom.
Was that exhausting for you?
A little, but it was a gas.
It was fun.
I had a great time.
A little stressful, though. Fortunately, we had somebody lining up interviews, right? Else I think that would have been a lot more stressful.
That's the Freedom 2015 event.
Right.
And then Tuesday, I
got to go back on there.
Yeah, it was 2 hours with Mac.
I can't believe they're allowing you on the air so much on the station.
I know. Well, two hours.
The standards have really been...
That's true. Well, the FCC is probably looking into it as we speak, but 2 hours with Mac, that's always...
You spent 2 hours.
Actually, it was maybe an hour and a half, but yeah, it was...
I usually try to get in and out in an hour, but good for you.
Yeah, and then yesterday, I got roped into deal down at Smoky Row where we had a round table with Major Garrett.
Yeah, when you told me that you were going to do that, I had no idea Major Media Presence was going to be there. Was he just participating or was he reporting on it?
Well, he was the one asking the questions.
Oh, so it was kind of like you were a focus group.
Something along those lines.
Okay.
I don't know. You know, it was wild though too, because they had us right in the middle of Smoky Row, right in front of the counter. So we're talking away, and all of a sudden somebody's grinding ice for a smoothie. Well, I have a hard time hearing when there's a lot of ambient noise anyway.
Yeah, were they recording?
Yeah.
Oh, wow, you're going to be on the news?
I suppose. Okay. Anyway.
That's exciting.
Anyway, it's been a wild week.
Only in Iowa.
That's true.
Only in Iowa. Yep.
You, on the other hand, I know what you're thinking about.
Oh, I'm dreaming of Hawkeye football champion. Actually, national championship. Let's take it one game at a time. I want to get past Minnesota. If Iowa can get past Minnesota.
I know. It's a huge game tomorrow.
Iowa needs a little payback with Minnesota after last year. Then getting back, because Nebraska, obviously unpredictable since they beat Michigan State.
You have no idea what Nebraska team is going to show up on
right.
the field.
I'm hoping it's the crappy
still,
one.
Still, though, I'm not a Hawk fan, but I can get into the excitement here.
Right. And then if we do happen to win the division, you know, you still have this little thing called Ohio State in the Big Ten championship game, which, yeah, that's going
to
be a little...
Nothing
to
it.
No sweat. Now, if they beat Ohio State, then I'm like, hey, and you know, go for it, because... That they just beat one of the top teams in the nation right there.
Look, I realize it's a tough three games ahead.
I think they can go in that game undefeated.
Well, I think Iowa is a much better team than I had anticipated earlier in the season. I'm not going to count them out.
I don't think anybody expected this, Brian.
I'm not going to count them out.
Right. So yeah, it's gonna be. It's been fun. Regardless, you know, even if they lose, I really hope they win tomorrow, because they really do need to pay Minnesota back, and they need to beat Nebraska. So yeah, I hope they go undefeated. But I mean, it just every year now they're setting a school, or every week if they win, they're setting a school record.
Right.
So that's fun.
All right, so what are we doing here today?
Well, we're talking to a guest who happens to be from the state of Wisconsin, whom Iowa beat, just I have to say.
He's going to appreciate that.
Right. We got Dr. Duke Pesta.
On our VIP line.
On our VIP line. Dr. Pesta received his MA in Renaissance Literature from John Carroll University and his PhD in Shakespeare and Renaissance Literature from Purdue University. He has taught at major research institutions and small liberal arts colleges and has been active in educational reform, developing and implementing an elective Bible course that is currently available for public high school students in Texas.
Now, that's cool.
Yeah, I want to talk to him. Oh, we need to talk a little bit about that.
I like that.
And he is a professor of English at the University of Wisconsin Oshkosh and the academic director of Freedom Project Education. And he's probably going to be horrified by my grammar then, I'm assuming. So welcome, Dr. Pesta, to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Welcome, sir.
Thanks, guys, for having me. Just to clear the record up, I'm from Ohio, so go Buckeyes. I heard what you guys
said. Oh! That's even worse.
I'm really glad you beat the Badgers. It'll be a different thing in the championship game, I would imagine.
Yeah, that's going to be... I will be jumping for joy if Iowa would win that, but I'm not necessarily expecting it. So anyway, you just put out a new video because you've been just a little bit busy going around the nation. Was it over 400 talks you've given so far on Common Core?
Yeah, over 400. We've been in 41 states over the last 3.5 years. We've been pretty busy.
Yeah, I thought I gave a lot of talks in Common Core, but man, you've been crazy busy. So you've been interacting with people, and you've been hearing from people, and you've been being able to share the message about the Common Core state standards, and you now have this new presentation that's you could find online at Freedom Project Education's website. I can't off the top of my head. Is it feusa.org?
Yes, sir. You got it.
All right. Great. You can watch it there. It's called Common Core from Farce to Failure.
I love the title.
I do too.
Farce to Failure.
I love it. I love it. I'll admit I haven't been able to watch the whole video yet, but I did get to watch, you know, it's part of it. Can you go through why is Common Core a farce?
Well, I start with a quote from Karl Marx, and he says, "History repeats itself. The first time is tragedy, and the second time is farce." And that's my way of saying, because I think we need to know this, that Common Core is not really all that new. It's not a radical departure from what we've been doing. The seeds of Common Core, the seeds of what it is and why it's here, were planted long ago. And so the tragedy of American education is that this kind of thing has been going on for over 50 years. But we've reached the point now with Common Core that it's almost farcical. It's farcical how unrepresentative it was, how it was put in. The people who defend it will tell you what it is. And to me, the biggest farce of Common Core is that the people who promote and support it will look you in the eye and tell you things that are just clearly, factually, utterly untrue, and they don't bat an eye when they do it.
Okay, give us some examples of that.
Well, this idea that Common Core was primarily state-led, I mean, that's perhaps one of the biggest ones. They call them the Common Core state standards. In the same way that they call the national health care law the Affordable Care Act.
Right.
I don't think anybody really believes that either. But with Common Core, the idea that this was state-led is absurd because we've got David Cole. Part of my presentation shows David Coleman, who is the architect of Common Core, on film talking about the origins of Common Core, which weren't the states at all, and it certainly wasn't the governors.
No.
It was a group of people in a room with a napkin that were contacted by the Obama administration because they used data really well during the 2008 presidential campaign.
Right. Right. So, yeah, it's definitely, you know, I like to say it this way, that it's not state-led, it's special interest-led. Would you say it's accurate?
I would. I would say it's special interest-led, but I would also say that all of those special interests are ultimately catering their message to what the feds wanted, what Arne Duncan wanted. The Race to the Top federal program, of course, was the mechanism by which it got in the school. So this is... I define Common Core as an unholy alliance between an out-of-control federal government and a very small select group of crony capitalist organizations who have propagated this as well.
But Duke, you know, these standards, they're voluntary, right?
Yeah. If they were voluntary, then why can't states walk away from them as easily as they took them? Why is the Federal Department of Education blackmailing states who are trying to get out of it if the states let it? Why is Illinois being held hostage for $1.17 billion? Because Chicago schools don't want to administer the test.
Yeah,
to all
they're part
one
state.
City in the whole state.
Yeah, it's that is interesting because they got No Child Left Behind, so they did say, hey, we're gonna withhold money. They did this to California when California said, hey, we're gonna just put a hold on assessments until we actually get this learner balance thing figured out. And Arne Duncan came in and said, not if you want money, you're not going to do that.
It goes even further than that.
Mm-hmm.
You may recall back in April of this year, Arne Duncan, who's now no longer at the Federal Department of Education, but in April of this year, he basically threatened that if states continue to allow kids to opt out, and all 50 states allow kids to opt out of these tests, then his federal government, he said, would have to intervene to stop that. That doesn't sound voluntary to me.
Yeah, well, it's kind of the whole opt-out thing has been, it's crazy because the whole premise is, well, if there's no opt-out law, this is what educrats will say, if there's no opt-out law, then you can't opt out. Where we say, if there's no law prohibiting us to opt out, we can opt out.
Right, and contract law is on your side.
Right.
Okay, hang on here, Dr. Pesta. Tell us what the hammer would look like. Is implied in the threat.
Well, you know, this is the thing. I'm not sure there's a credible legal way they could do it. The problem is that nobody wants to take them on, that the states cower before these pronouncements from the federal government. I think what has to happen is that some of these states just have to push forward and press for lawsuits. So much of what's gone on with Common Core is questionably legal at best. And I do realize that a lot of it depends on the judges. I mean, Bobby Jindal, of course, tried to bring some of this before federal judges, but he got a couple of Obama-appointed judges who threw the case out. But I don't see how, if the feds themselves keep telling us that this is a voluntary, state-led program, how then they can turn around and use federal power to punish schools and states who don't take it. It doesn't make any sense.
Right, right.
Anytime somebody says federal intervention, my radar goes on and you know, my alarm bells go off and whoop, 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 danger, Will Robinson.
Yeah, and we're going to be looking to D.C. Because, you know, you got the conference committee in the House and the Senate that are coming together to hammer out the details between their two reauthorization bills of the Elementary and Secondary Education Act, and that's kind of a... Well, having looked at that, that's kind of a crab sandwich, too.
Yeah, I think what it is a movement led by particularly Senate Republicans to protect and shelter Common Core. It is amazing that when it comes to Common Core, this is not a two-party issue. This is not a Democrat-Republican issue. This is a political class versus the rest of us issue. And that's why you have so many Republicans, even, who are circling the wagons and trying to defend the federal government's right to ultimately control standards and control assessments and control the way our kids are educated.
You're listening to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, and on the line we have Dr. Duke Pesta. This is Shane Vanner with Brian Myers. And Dr. Pesta, what are some of the other farces with Common Core? We got about 5 minutes left.
I think even bigger than the state-led one, which was so transparent as to be laughable, I think the biggest, most dangerous farce of Common Core is this idea that is endlessly repeated, that Common Core is just a set of standards, that teachers are 100% free to read any books they want, pursue any way of teaching they like, as long as these kids meet these innocuous benchmarks. Mm. And yet, as I show in the video, we've got Bill Gates in 2009 insisting that the standards, when they get lined up to the tests, will drive curriculum.
Yes.
We have a direct quote from David Coleman, Common Core architect, in the video, who says, "There is no force on this earth strong enough to prevent your teachers from teaching to our tests." Mm. So this idea that the textbook companies who produced all the pedagogy that supports and teaches teachers how to teach Common Core, that somehow they're not implicit in this, that somehow the standards are innocuous, the tests are a separate entity, and the textbooks are all unrelated, like all accidentally these planets aligned without any overall coercion or any overall organizational principle. And all the major players in Common Core keep insisting, and we've got them all on film, that the tests are going to drive how your teachers teach.
Right.
It's going to limit what your teachers teach.
Well, if the teacher evaluations get tied to assessments, that's just going to be a given. Right, and there's going to be no way to get around that. And as far as the textbooks are concerned, I mean, when you had initially 46 states adopting Common Core, it's just economic principle. Of course, publishers are going to, if they weren't already on board with Common Core, and there are already a lot of them that were, the rest are going to follow suit, and we're seeing that trickle downhill. I'm a homeschooling family, and we're starting to see greater amounts of Common Core aligned homeschooling material, which is disturbing. Christian schools are
now.
Right. So we got about 3 minutes left. So what are you telling people to do? What can we do?
Well, I think, the opt-out is the only means necessary, the only thing we have left. It's not ultimately a great solution, but at least as we stand here today, that moms and dads can opt kids out of tests. The fact that Arne Duncan's freaked out about it and is now threatening states shows you that they don't like it. Because the only thing then that they have to measure, and they're not measuring student achievement either, the only way they have to measure, get the kind of data they want from these tests, is if most kids take them. That's a very weak resource, though, because states are already beginning to close down those loopholes even without being asked to do so by the federal government. I think, honestly, what you need to do is you need to, like what you're doing, Shane, you need to homeschool your kids or you need to put them in a very safe, non-Common Core private school. We lost this fight way before Common Core because for a long time, moms and dads conceded that the federal government was primarily responsible for educating your kids. Unless we change that mentality and make parents responsible, again, then this is just going to continue and it's going to get worse.
And it's going to need, there's going to need a wholesale change in D.C. Not only do we need somebody in the White House is willing to shake some things up, we need a Congress and that's going to go along with that.
Well, that's true, but we also need states that are not always going to be able to be bought off by the federal government with their money.
Right, and that's the one thing that, appreciated about Rick Perry. Texas said no to race the top. Alaska said no to race the top, even though they later came back and said, hey, we'd like a waiver, and they aligned their standards to Common Core and took Smarter Balance, at least briefly. States need to push back a little bit, too, even if it means losing federal money. Really, how much compared to all the money that's being spent education in a particular state? In Iowa, we spend 60% of our state budget is education. How much is federal funding really?
That's right. In all the states that took Common Core, the numbers range from 4.8% to 7.1% of the entire state budget. That's all you're getting from the feds, and it's just a one-year giveaway.
Right.
All you're getting in 1 year is about 6%. Of what you pay 1 year for schools. And for that, we've sold our schools to the feds. It's ridiculous.
Dr. Pesta, thank you very much. Be sure to check out fpeusa.org. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll be back.
Hi, this is Brian Myers of Myers & Associates. If you're involved in maintenance at a manufacturing plant, you know how costly it can be when a machine goes down. And if the reason that machine went down is because the electronic controls on it failed, it can really be problematic if those electronics are obsolete. Well, not to worry. We represent Providence Industrial Electronics Repair, and they can get your machine up and running in no time. They repair boards, drives, servo motors, light curtains, you name it. So if you need industrial electronics repaired at your plant, or if you have other industrial maintenance needs, give me a call at 515-490-2640. That's Myers & Associates, 515-490-2640. Myers & Associates, keeping your operations running.
And welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Travis Riswold of Modern Woodmen of America. Call Travis at 515-883-0029, and he can help you find the life insurance
you need.
Well, we had another debate.
We did indeed.
And the winner is Fox Business Network and Wall Street Journal. Congratulations to them both, because they put on a fine debate. Comparatively speaking.
You mean they weren't the focus?
No, it was amazing.
They were not debating the candidates?
I knew they had a shot of putting on the best debate. Of course, that bar was set very, very low.
Yeah. They could have done almost anything.
Right.
It would have been an improvement.
Right. And they did a great job. I thought that both debates was well done. One thing regarding kind of going off topic. Well, no, it's about debates. I cannot remember who brought this idea up. So it's not my idea. I'm not going to take credit for it. I heard this. If I could remember who I heard it from, I'd give them credit. We should do, instead of this first debate, second debate, obviously you're going to have two debates because there are a lot of people on stage. But why have eight people in one debate and only four in another? Why not do six and six? And let's start a lottery. Let's do it by lottery and have the debates only 10 minutes apart.
I like the latter. I'm not sure I like the former suggestion.
Which one, the 6 and 6?
Yeah, I'm not sure that's necessarily. I mean, theoretically, let's say that you had,
or 7 and 7 if you allow, you know, Pataki and Graham back in.
Well, I'm just saying you may be giving, in theory, some equal time when the poll results are just ridiculously widespread.
But the national polling is kind of driven by the debates and it's kind of, and media coverage, and it's kind of this ongoing circular
self-fulfilling kind of a thing.
So it'd be, you know, some of these lower tier candidates might be polling higher if people actually knew who they were. So give them a shot.
Well, I'm
maybe at least for one or two debates.
I'm certainly sympathetic to the notion to giving the lower card or the undercard, you know, a higher profile.
Because frankly, the first debate much more substantive than the second debate.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not even close. Not even close.
Yeah, I was not able to watch that, but that was the impression I was getting from the stuff that I was reading.
Right, and you know, that's not to knock the first people in the first debate, but I'm sorry, when you got Ben Carson and Donald Trump and Jeb Bush, who worked for a bank but apparently doesn't necessarily understand the banking industry all that well. At least that was what I was hearing from a couple economists.
We've got a couple of clips here, so let's.
We need to get
these clips in.
I think one of the best exchanges was Rand Paul versus Marco Rubio on military spending. This clip's about 3 minutes long.
A point that I'd like to make about the tax credits. We have to decide what is conservative and what isn't conservative. Is it fiscally conservative to have a $1 trillion expenditure? We're not talking about giving people back their tax money. He's talking about giving people money they didn't pay. It's a welfare transfer payment. So here's what we have. Is it conservative to have $1 trillion in transfer payments, a new welfare program that's a refundable tax credit? Add that to Marco's plan for $1 trillion in new military spending, and you get something that looks to me not very conservative.
Thank you. Governor. Governor Casey.
No,
let me come to Governor Casey.
No,
Governor Casey.
I get to respond.
Very quickly, Senator.
No, I get my 60 seconds to respond. He's talking about my tax plan.
Please.
So let me begin with this. I actually believe, first of all, this is their money. They do pay. It is refundable, not just against the taxes they pay to the government, but also on their federal income tax. It's refundable against the payroll tax. Everyone pays payroll tax. This is their money. This is not our money. And here's what I don't understand. If you invest that money in a piece of equipment, if you invest that money in a business, you get to write it off your taxes. But if you invest it in your children, in the future of America, in strengthening your family, we're not going to recognize that in our tax code. The family is the most important institution in society.
Nevertheless, it's not.
And yes, I do want to rebuild the American military.
How is it conservative?
I know that Rand is a committed isolationist. I'm not. I believe the world is a stronger and a better place when the United States is the strongest military power in the world.
Marco, how is it conservative? How is it conservative to add $1 trillion expenditure for the federal government that you're not paying for? How is it conservative? How is it conservative to add $1 trillion in military expenditures? You cannot be a conservative if you're going to keep promoting new programs that you're not going to pay for.
I may respond
more quickly. Yeah. Very quickly, Senator.
We can't even have an economy if we're not safe. There are radical jihadists in the Middle East beheading people and crucifying Christians. A radical Shia cleric in Iran trying to get a nuclear weapon. The Chinese taking over the South China Sea. Yes, I believe the world is a safer... No, I don't believe. I know that the world is a safer and better place when America is the strongest military power in the world.
Marco, I don't think we're any safer. I do not think we are any safer from bankruptcy court. As we go further and further into debt, we become less and less safe. This is the most important thing we're going to talk about tonight. Can you be a conservative and be liberal on military spending? Can you be for unlimited military spending and say, oh, I'm going to make the country safe? No, we need a safe country.
But you know, we spend more on our military than the next 10 countries combined. I want a strong national defense, but I don't.
All right, that's probably good. That was a passion exchange. I thought both brought up some good points.
I agree.
I don't fully agree with Rand Paul, but having served in the military, he does bring up some good points. I got to hear him speak a little bit more about this in Altoona this week when he came back to Iowa. He basically said, you know, we're spending more money on our military than any other nation in the world. Let's just make sure we cut out waste and reprioritize. You know, there are certain programs we don't need to be spending money on anymore. So, on one hand, I don't know if we need necessarily an extra trillion. And I'm not entirely sure that's a fair accuracy of Marco Rubio's position. I'd have to research that. Maybe it is. But on the other hand, I think we need to spend a little bit more. But I think definitely we can't just blindly throw money at the military and assume that's all getting spent well.
Well, I think there's a separate question here, and maybe those guys talked about it. For me, I have no problem with the point that Marco is making. I think he's exactly right. We need to be the strongest.
We need to be the
leader of the free world.
I agree.
So I have no problem with that, and I know that's going to cost money. Here's my problem, and I think Rand would come in and say amen to that, and it is, let's not keep committing the United States to what appears to be an endless series of wars, or certainly conflicts.
And then nation building.
And then subsequent nation building.
Right.
I mean, it's a huge problem.
Nation building is expensive.
We have to pick our fights better.
Right.
And with all due respect to George W. Bush, Iraq a decade ago was the wrong place and the wrong fight.
Rear vision, or I can't think of the phrase now, is always 2020.
Sure.
Because, a lot of us, hindsight. Thank you. Could not think of it. A lot of us thought, he was involved in WMD. A lot of us thought that there was even ties to terrorism. So obviously WMD ended up in Syria.
But everybody thought there was WMD.
Right.
But that still, to my way of thinking, that in and of itself was not enough at that time to invade Iraq.
I agree. And at the time, I wouldn't have said that. But
there's a lot of blood and treasure.
Yeah, but having looked back and being a little bit wiser now than I think I was back then.
So I have no problem with having a strong military. I have no problem with being a leader of the free world as a nation. But we have got to pick our fights more carefully.
Right, right. How much time we have? We're going to play a little bit of this next clip. Bobby Jindal versus Chris Christie.
Governor Jindal. There's a new trade deal the Obama administration has completed with 11 other Pacific nations. The U.S. Trade Representative's office says that deal will cut 18,000 different tariffs on American goods sent to the Pacific, and will cut tariffs on goods made in your state of Louisiana by as much as 40%. You've been a skeptic about this deal. Now that the details are public, are you going to be for it?
I was absolutely a skeptic of giving this president more power. He negotiated a bad deal with Iran. He breaks the law routinely. I don't know why Congress would want to concede more authority to him. Look, this trade deal is 6,000 pages long. Unlike Obamacare, I think we should read it before we decide whether we're to vote for it or not vote for it. I am for trade deals, but I want to make sure there are fair trade deals. I want to come back to something that Chris had said earlier. Look, I absolutely agree we've got to beat Hillary Clinton. But just sending any Republicans not good enough. We've had a Republican majority in the Senate and the House. What has changed? If we send another big government Republican to the White House, we will not do enough to fix what is wrong in this country. Chris, I think records matter. I think the way we govern matter. Under your leadership in New Jersey, your budget's gone up 15%. It's gone down 26% in Louisiana. It has gone up $5 billion in New Jersey. It's gone down $9 billion in Louisiana. In New Jersey, you've had 9 credit downgrades, setting a record. We've had 8 credit upgrades in Louisiana. My point is this. If politicians say they're going to be conservative, they say they're going to cut spending, but they don't do it, why should we send them to D.C.? It gets harder, not easier, when we send them to D.C. Let's not be a second liberal party. Let's actually cut government spending. Let's grow the American economy. Let's not just beat Hillary. Let's elect a conservative to the White House, not just any Republican.
Governor Christie?
I, I'll tell you, Jerry, it's interesting. If you go to New Jersey, they'll call me lots of different things. A liberal is not one of them. And I would say this. I have great respect for Bobby's record in Louisiana. I think he's been a wonderful governor. I think he's provided outstanding leadership for that state, and I respect him for what he's done. And I think that all of us deserve that same level of respect. And my point is this. You know, the differences between me and Bobby Jindal, we can talk about those. And obviously, Bobby wants to spend a lot of time tonight talking about that. I'll tell you what I want to talk about. I want to talk about what's going to happen to this country if we have another 4 years of Barack Obama's policies.
All right, we can go ahead.
And by the way, it'll be even worse.
And basically, Governor Christie just refused to engage. So because he refused to engage, some of the Beltway pundits said, oh, Christie won the debate. Because he
took the high road.
He took the high road. Yeah. He brought it back to Hillary.
Well, I did hear some folks say that they thought that, you know, Jindal was on the attack to the point where maybe he crossed a line.
Yeah.
That was some of what I was hearing. Everybody said that. Eric Erickson said he did a great job.
I thought he won the debate, but I would say there were a couple spots where he could have ratcheted down a little bit and maybe backed off a little bit. But I liked that he was aggressive. Honestly, you know, where he's at in the polls, he did what he needs to do. And, you know, I don't think it hurt Chris Christie. Governor Jindal's not competing against Chris Christie in Iowa. Chris Christie will not win the Iowa caucuses,
right.
Period.
He's going nowhere.
However, Bobby Jindal might have actually helped Chris Christie in New Hampshire.
Good point.
So,
point taken.
So this may have been a win-win. You know, so we'll see. We'll see. But I think, you know, this whole, well, yeah, of course we don't want Hillary Clinton in. But this is a primary,
Duh. A
contested primary, and we are trying to choose the best nominee. So somebody who's unwilling to measure their record up against other people tells me they're not really serious about the job, at least convincing voters that they're the right person for the job. And this whole notion, oh, he said later on, people don't want to hear about this. They should. Why are we giving low information voters a pass? They need to know about this.
They sure do.
This is important. Records are important.
And as Jindal has made the case, we've got a surrender caucus in Congress right now. We need some leadership up there that's not going to bolster that notion of being surrender only. We got to have some fighters up there, some guys that are actually going to do something.
Absolutely.
Christie is going to be shaking hands with guys across the aisle constantly.
Right.
I don't think there's any doubt about that.
Right. Walking hand in hand down the beach. You see, I seem to remember him doing that once before.
In a raincoat?
I think so. Yeah. Hey, this is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll be back.
Hi, this is Brian Myers. When I needed a better life insurance plan, I found it with Travis Risvold of Modern Woodmen of America. When I first met Travis, he wasn't like some other life insurance agents that can be pushy and try to get you to buy something. Travis just made himself available to me. That was it. He told me to let him know if and when I needed anything, and he stayed in touch. When the day came and I did need to make some changes with my life insurance, Travis met with me and walked me through several options so I could make an informed decision. Ultimately, it was the best decision for my situation. So if you need a better or the best life insurance plan for you, call my friend Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. His number is 515-883-0029. Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. He can help you find the life insurance you need. Call him at 515-883-0029.
Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Hey, welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Crosswalk Ministries with Scott Owen, who offers biblical counseling and conciliation. Give him a call at 515-292-7141 or go to crosswalkcounseling.org.
And now we've come to our news rundown for the week. And we once again are going to talk about Hillary and her emails. This has become sort of a regular feature on the News Rundown. Maybe it should be kind of our feature of the week.
I wonder if this will actually be brought up in the Democratic debate this weekend.
We shall see. According to The Hill, the FBI has expanded its probe of former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton's emails beyond a provision involving, quote, gross negligence, unquote, with national defense information. Agents are now also looking at whether statements that have been made violate a federal statute on providing, quote, materially false, unquote, information.
Oh, wow.
The agents involved are under a lot of pressure and are busting their tails.
Gluteus maximus.
Yes.
It's okay. We didn't violate any FCC violation there.
Okay. An unidentified intelligence source told the network, which noted that the statute can be broadly applied. Political reported earlier this week that the FBI has stepped up inquiries into the private email server Clinton used during her tenure as Secretary of State. Clinton faced a barrage of questions about her email setup during her lauded appearance last month before the House panel investigating the 2012 Benghazi attack. Did you catch that, guy's lauded appearance?
Well, you know.
So she gives testimony. It's quite clear from the testimony that she lied. The entire administration lied.
Right.
And yet, it's a lauded appearance, one in which I think she must have saved the republic. Absolutely stunning. But yeah.
She's definitely an asset.
Here's the thing we're hearing here, guys. I'm still not going to hold my breath, but I think it's at least possible that the FBI will indeed pursue this and indict her. Now, I can't imagine if she actually gets indicted that she can continue the campaign. How do you campaign for the presidency when you're under an FBI?
She's
an indictment
Clinton.
From the Justice Department.
She's Clinton.
Yeah,
this is like par for the course.
Oh dear. Okay. Trouble at Mizzou. Will it continue to spread elsewhere?
I hope not. At least keep it south of Iowa.
Yeah, this is from the New York Times. The passion that ousted the heads of the University of Missouri after protests over racial discrimination on campus is spreading to other colleges across the country, turning traditional fall semesters into a period of intense focus on racial misunderstanding and whether activism stifles free speech. Hundreds of students demonstrated at Ithaca College in upstate New York on Wednesday, demanding the resignation of the college president, Tom Roshan, for what they said was his lackluster response to complaints of racial insensitivity on campus, including an episode in which two white male alumni on a panel called a black alumna a savage after she had said she had a savage hunger to succeed. Look, this thing's getting out of hand.
Right.
And what I find interesting, on the one hand, it's kind of amusing because you see the left kind of, you know, imploding
right
in academia.
I'm just thinking, Brian, I need my safe zone.
Oh, boy.
Somewhere where I can go and, you know, I'm not going to feel bad.
Well, the Biffy's right down the hall.
I do feel better after going there.
No. Oh, dear. Okay.
Pop, pop, fizz, fizz. Oh, what a relief it is.
Oh, you guys. You guys are impossible.
Next story.
Okay. According to Charlie Cook, expertise and experience are disqualifiers in the GOP right now. This is according to Breitbart. In an appearance on MSNBC's Morning Joe on Thursday, Charlie Cook, editor of the Cook Political Report, suggested that experience has become a disqualifier in Republican Party politics. According to Cook, the rise of Donald Trump, Ben Carson, and Carly Fiorina is evidence this phenomenon is a real thing. Well, we've gotten to the point where experience and expertise has gone from being a good quality to an overrated commodity to now a disqualifier, Cook said.
Which is, I still shake my head at that. It's true. He's got a point.
I would point to the three outsiders, Trump, Carson, and Fiorina. None of them have ever held public office whatsoever. But if you at least look at Fiorina, this is someone who has actually studied these issues, who has mastered them, and who is absolutely 100% converse in these things. In a sharp contrast with Carson and Trump, who sort of is a millimeter deep.
You know what? That's not charitable. No. They're an inch deep.
Anyway, Cook goes on. He says, "It is striking to me. I don't think it hurts them within their individual basis, but it does keep them from growing beyond that point."
I agree.
Well, he is articulating what we've been seeing here in Iowa, right, certainly all along.
I think they're both capped. I don't see them growing beyond where they're at. The whole experience, it just drives me absolutely the top four you got, and a lot of people are thinking will be our final four, and I'm not sure I agree with that, but and that's the conversation that's happening with some pundits. They'll say Trump, Carson, Cruz, and Rubio. While Cruz and Rubio have experience, they've got the least amount of experience out of the elected officials.
That's right.
So
that's right.
Yeah. So you kind of see the trend happening there.
The governors in this race have in some instances just gone nowhere, and then we saw what happened to Walker.
And frankly, some of the governors have awful record. So there's that too.
This wouldn't be Pataki and Christie, would it?
Pataki, Christie, Kasich, and Bush's.
Oh, I forgot about Kasich.
You know, Bush's record actually.
About Kasich.
Bush is a mix. And I want to make it very clear. I support Bobby Jindal. Bush's actual record as governor is really not that bad. It's kind of what he's done after with education reform that has really gotten him in a lot of hot water. And then his last name's Bush, which isn't helpful. And some of the people he brings into his circles, also not helpful.
Well, in any case, I think Cook is exactly right. We're looking at the wrong things, I think, as a party. But I can understand the frustration. Okay. The state of New York versus Exxon over climate change. This is from The Federalist. New York's Attorney General, Eric Schneiderman, has started an investigation of ExxonMobil to determine whether the company lied to the public about the risks of climate change or to investors about how such risks might hurt the oil business. This sounds a little bit like the tobacco wars, some years ago.
Yeah.
According to the New York Times, its sources said the inquiry would include a period of at least a decade during which ExxonMobil funded outside groups that sought to undermine climate science. Now, science. And the author of this article makes a great point. He says, see what they did here? To have a different view of climate science is to undermine it, because there's no scientific study of the climate except that which they agree with. We should start with the observation that Exxon could not possibly have lied about climate change, even if it wanted to, because first there would have to be a proven truth on the subject. Amen to that.
Well, right. And
stunning.
And Trump has equated Ben Carson's childhood pathological temper to the illness of a child molester. Questioned his religious awakening and berated voters who support him. Because those are things to win. That's how you win the Iowa caucus.
How can anybody expect to get votes when all they do is tell you what's wrong with the other person? Well, they don't tell you what's right with them.
Well,
right.
And this time
he'll make things great again.
And this time he went way over the top. We shall see if this really will hurt him.
It's Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll be back. Yeah, probably not.
That person brings out the worst in me. I never act like this with anyone else. Sound familiar? I'm Scott Owen with Crosswalk Ministries of Central Iowa, and it's time to pause for peace. Many want to know how some people know how to push their buttons. But the more helpful questions to answer are, who gave them access to their buttons? And what makes those buttons work? Too often, we fail to look at ourselves when someone provokes a response from us that we do not like. We are fixated on blaming them for being good at bringing out the bad in us. But where does that bad come from? The Bible says that it is our sinful desires that keep conflict going. Could it be that the button pusher might actually help you see what is really on the inside? If someone's pushing your buttons, why don't you take the time to stop by our counseling center here in Ames or visit our website at crosswalkcounseling.org. That's crosswalkcounseling.org.
Hey, welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. This is Shane Vanderhart, Brian Myers. Last segment. And before we move on, I just want to remind you that throughout the month of November, you can register for this month's giveaway, which will select the winner at the end of the month, or actually might be December 1st. But anyway, you'll be notified if you're the winner sometime around then. We're giving away a book by Rebecca Lauk. She was on our program last week called I Like My Disease Rare, along with a bonus, a $25 gift card to Caribou Coffee. And you can enter by going to caffeinatedthoughts.com and click on As Heard on the Radio button and make sure to enter the winning word, truth.
And that's what's that key. Word?
Truth.
What's if you that don't word, enter gentlemen?
That, that's truth. Truth. If you don't enter truth, you're not qualified to win because we want to make sure you heard this on the radio. That's why we call the page As Heard on the Radio. Okay.
Really?
Really. I know. I know. It's just rocket science here that we're doing. So,
and now we've come to my favorite part of the show. We are about to share a story that is truly unbelievable. Yet, you know it must be true because...
You can't make this stuff up.
And this is from Reuters. A judge in Salem, Massachusetts, on Wednesday, granted a self-proclaimed witch's request for a restraining order to keep a self-proclaimed warlock and business rival from harassing her. Lori?
Now, I have a question about this.
Oh, okay. You can ask. Because now, I may gonna be going to answer that here in a moment.
Yeah,
but go ahead. Preempt it.
Would this would this also say you can't perform any spells against him?
Ooh.
Or her? Or, yeah. Him. Anyway.
Well, look, she may be, who knows what she's doing, you know, in terms of that sort of thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, she's not going to bother bringing that to court.
Yeah.
Especially
or
if she,
him against her. That's what I meant to say.
Oh, okay. Well, whatever.
No all spells. Right.
Lori Sforza, that's it.
We're always good at pronouncing names.
75 years old. Wow.
Gracious.
She calls herself a psychic and a hereditary high priestess. She had appealed to Salem District Court Judge Robert Brennan to issue an order stopping Christian Day. What a name. Christian Day, who calls himself the world's best known warlock. Got a great name for a warlock, right? Christian
right.
Day. And he owns magic-themed stores in Salem and New Orleans, from making what she said were harassing phone calls. The two are well known in Salem, infamous as the site of the 17th century trials that led to the executions of 20 people found guilty of witchcraft. Modern-day Salem capitalizes on its morbid reputation with tourist attractions, both ghoulish and historic, that help the city draw about 1 million visitors a year, with crowds peaking in the run-up to Halloween. Christian Day hosts a Festival of the Dead in Salem, where participants can learn to become a paranormal investigator, hear from departed loved ones, or cast a magic circle on Salem Common.
I got one question.
Just one?
Yeah. Well, it's like she doesn't want to get these phone calls, right? And she's a psychic. How come she doesn't know who the phone call's from and just not answer the phone?
That's a good point. She should just know.
She should just know if she's a psychic,
well,
right?
Yeah, but she wouldn't even need to worry about that if she had, you know, caller ID.
Well, there you go. Maybe that's how
she wouldn't have to turn on her magic powers, you know, just
right.
caller ID. Oh, this is classic. We got some nutburger who thinks she's a witch and some goofball who thinks he's a warlock
in her defense,
Salem.
In her defense.
Having some sort of legal
In her defense, she probably does. She probably practices witchcraft. Ergo, she's a witch.
Whatever.
Not saying it's right, but anyway. Yeah, this is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. And on that high note, we bid you a good day. We'll see you next week.
Take care, everybody.